Mr. Hutton, Reel 4. We were talking about how you came to rejoin the unit after being wounded. They were still at Mercer, I presume, when you joined.
Yes. I think we had to pull a few strings to get out. I didn't tell them that... I didn't show them a bit that hadn't healed up. And I only showed them the bit that had, because I thought I'd get better treatment back at the regiment. And I set off. It was Cairo, Abbasia Barracks, the old Victorian place. I don't know whether I told you about all the bugs in that place, did I? I did, right. Anyway, I was very glad to get away from it. And it was a hell of a long time before I got to Amaria, which was a sort of staging post on the railway somewhere. I don't know why it took me so long, but I reckon I had one of the best meals of my life there, because I was so hungry. It was just a bully stew, but by Jove, I did enjoy it. I think it was about 6 o'clock at night when I had it, and I don't think I've ever been so hungry in my life. I eventually got back to the unit, and I got... And, of course, I'd been away quite a lot, because I'd been away with my pleurisy and I'd been away with the wound. And the chaps were so much fitter when I got back. They were brown. They nearly looked like niggers. They're all stripped to the waist. Some of the skins were nearly black. And I've always been a bit lazy and never very fond of digging. And everything was so different. They dug everything in. There was trenches connecting and places to sleep, and the guns were completely dug in. God knows what would, if they'd ever been attacked. I think the first time they ever fired a round, nobody'd be able to see anything for sand. But I'd been away and had missed all this hard work and digging. So I suppose I was lucky, really.
So you went back to your job as Don R?
I went back to being a Don R. Yes, I'm pretty sure I was, yes.
And what was...
No,
what?
I didn't. I went back. I think I was Don R for a bit. But we'd got a Bren carrier then. And I don't think anybody seemed to be very keen on having the job. And I was. So I got the job of learning to drive this Bren carrier.
What was it like to drive? I mean...
Oh, it's completely different. The steering was... you had a wheel, and if you turned it slightly that way, or turned it slightly that way, just slightly, all it did was bow the tracks, so that loosened the tracks or bowed it, so that the thing going, instead of going along straight, would veer off a bit like that. Or if you turned it that way, it just would veer, just because one track was... sort of loosened and slipping, so that it wouldn't drive straight. It would either veer off to the right or veer off to the left. But if you turn the wheel a bit harder, it either put your, whichever way you turned it, your back left hand brake drum, right, and stop the track dead. So the track on that side was stopped, so it'd spin you round. It nearly spin around on a sixpence, and. Then there was still a lot. That's when I sort of got this job of learning to drive this thing.
Was it, did it cope well with the desert conditions?
Oh yes, it was. I liked it. I mean, if very rarely it never got stuck. It did it. If you dropped into if you weren't looking quite where you were going, and you went over a slit trench, it didn't seem to matter. I mean, if you drove a ordinary vehicle over an old slit trench or something, you probably got stuck. Suited me very well.
Were you trained in the Bren as well?
No, I was just driving this Bren. It never had a Bren gun on it. It only had a useless thing, say a boy's anti-tank rifle sticking out the front. It was really for the ears and eyes of the artillery.
The OP?
The OP, you see.
And Was it the only one you had?
It's the only one that seemed to be had there then. I'm not saying 426 battery probably had one as well, and so I think we had two. There wasn't one for each troop, I'm sure.
So you started driving this while you were at Mercer?
Well, at Mercer. And what I found very good for, you see, I didn't like sleeping in the dugouts because of the fleas. So what I used to do, I dug out a little sort of grave about 6 inches, 4 or 5 inches deep, put my bed in it, and drove the thing over it, and I used to crawl in under it to sleep, you see, at night. And it kept the dew off me, and if there was air raid, all this stuff that was going up into the air, it wasn't the bomb, I mean, if a bomb dropped on it, but in all the shell caps and things from the Antichrist, they'd come whistling down, and you've got a roof over your head, it didn't worry you. And it wasn't claustrophobic. That was a very comfortable bed, that was.
And what were your duties now you were driving this?
I think I was DRing it as well, I think. I would imagine, because I got nothing. I didn't actually. All I did was learn to drive it and look after it. And it was in quite good condition.
So what did you have to do as Donard during this period? I mean, what was your job?
Well, the main thing was I didn't have an awful lot to do, but I made out I had, you see. So, I couldn't have gone and do fatigues and things because I was always busy. I would say, well, I've got to go up to RHQ now, you see, if somebody wants me to do something.
But couldn't they tell when you were in a confined space like Mercer what you were doing?
Well, I mean, we had to get from RHQ to the different gun positions, and I seemed to get away with it all right anyway. Had certain runs to do, and I mean, I didn't get away with it always, but I'd got it pretty well sorted out.
Now, what about, I know it comes up later, that you had established links. You'd made a series of useful friendships in the
race. Oh, yes, I mean...
Can you tell me about that? Because that's quite interesting. Who were these useful links?
Well, I suppose it's a bit like this. It's a bit like Masons, isn't it? They always say that they help each other. Well, I'm a great believer in that sort of thing. I'm not a Mason, but I mean, it's just different. People in a golf club help each other, don't they? And so I made friends. I had my own friends as well, but I'd got well in with the cooks.
Did you set out?
Well, I tell you what, you see, I was the rumour spreader. You see, I used to get round the troops, and I was the only one that used to could spread the rumours around, you see. You know, if there was a rumour going around that we're all going to China, I'd be the one that would spread it around.
Did you make them up as well? Or did you just...
No, I think they were the other things I heard, and I just used to pass it on. No, I don't think I ever did it... I didn't make things up, but I mean, I'd hear the rumours, and I think I used to spread them around. I mean, wasn't a deal else to do, was there? It always been. No. There were all sorts of rumours going round after Tobruk fell. The rumour was that we were all going home to England, it was going to be a victory march through London. Well, that was a very good, everybody was looking forward to that. I didn't make it up, but that was one of the things that I can remember spreading that rumour around.
So you were... Then did you set out to become friends with certain people? I mean, did you actually target, say, I must get to be friendly with that cook, you know?
Well, I mean, it was the obvious thing to do. That's where the food was, so... And I always wanted to know what I'd got to tell them, you see. That's how I got to know. I mean, I'd been up to RHQ and I could tell them the latest things from regimental headquarters. I mean,
And what did the cooks give you? Extra food?
Oh, yes, I got extra food. And I only darned one pair of socks all the time I was in the army, and it was like walking on a brick. So, oh dear. And, I could always get a pair of socks if I hadn't...
So you were friends with the quartermaster?
I'd got all things just right. And the longer it went on, the better I got on. But then, as I say, later on, it was end of it all.
So what were conditions like while you were at Mercer? We'll come to...
Well, you see, Mercer Matru was a very pleasant... If there wasn't a sandstorm going, it was a very, very pleasant place. I mean, I think the Prince of Wales used to go there for holidays and sort of things. It was a beautiful beach and near the sea, and the sea was as blue as anything. I should imagine if it hadn't been for all the vehicles rushing about and then wind coming up and making a sandstorm, then it was a very, very pleasant place.
Did you get much time for recreation down by the beach? Or
well, we had played a bit of rugger, because you've got to remember the 425 battery was made up of Peter Birkin, who was captain of the Notts Rugger Club, brought a lot of people in from the Notts Rugger Club to join. And so there was a rugger team.
Were you in it?
Yes, and we played. Used to play things like mostly RAF people, because other regiments and things were mostly played soccer. So, but a lot of RAF stations were. I think we had about, not many. I think I played in about three or four matches. That's all.
And were they hard games or were they friendlies?
I think they were fairly friendly. It was, you know, it was.
What was the surface like for playing rugby?
Well, we played it on sand, you see. I know we played on one RAS station, and that was. I can remember if you fell down there, you grazed yourself. But it wasn't too bad where we played at Merseytrew. It was sort of fairly sort of more like beach sand. I don't know whether it was near the salt. I can't remember where it was.
Is that difficult to run in?
But we wore gym shoes, you know. We didn't wear rugger boots. I can't remember much. I played about four matches.
What other recreations would you have while you're at Merse?
Oh, they had. I didn't go on it, but there was a. They had a yacht on the. There was a salt lake at Merse. And John Walker, a few of them, had this yacht and used to do a bit of sailing on it.
Did you not fancy that?
Well, I don't know. I never sort of got into it, I suppose. I think a lot of these things you've done, you know, when I was away. I can't really tell you how long it was at Merseytrew before we pulled out, you know, when I got back there. I don't think it was very long before we.
So you weren't at Merse very much, because you...
I spent more time in hospital at Merseytrew than I did actually at Merseytrew. This digging, I missed all that.
Right. What about the general living conditions at Merse? How were they? You know, the food, that sort of thing, the...
Well, as far as I was concerned, the food was ample. Had a lot of... sometimes it was at lunchtime, it would be... tin margarine and jam and biscuits. There was a lot of that. And the margarine varied a lot. Some tins it was just like axle grease, and some tins were you know, more like butter. And tin pilchards and those little bits of cheese in silver paper, those things. And of course, bully. And then there was an awful lot of vegetables used to come up, things like melons and things like that.
And you'd get extra from the cooks?
I did very well.
So...
I don't think I lost weight in Tobruk. I didn't. I fed very, very well.
You weren't on the operations, you
know? No, I didn't have nothing to do with that operation. I was still... Imagine, I was still carrying on being Donar. And... We knew that there was something going off, but I don't think we knew. And then all these prisoners, I can see that, remember them coming through.
Were there a lot of them?
Oh, yeah.
What was their mood? I mean, did they impress you? They'd be Italians.
Oh, they were. I don't know whether I didn't realise it then. I was a bit cocky and our morale was very high, but it was pretty obvious. I don't think it was obvious to me then that, well, they weren't... They were just peasants, and they didn't know what the war was about, I shouldn't think. They'd just been told a lot of propaganda, and I shouldn't think they liked their officers.
You say morale was very high then. Were you Did those two operate, you know, the dummy battery and the composite battery, their part in the offensive?
We knew all about, got to know that, and we thought how good we were, you know. And we used to sort of hero worship the 4th RHA. They were the... Although I think the 1st RHA eventually had more to do with them, but in those days, the 4th RHA and this... Who was this chap? Jock Campbell, was he at the 4th RHA? He was the sort of chap that would go into a naffy, and if the tea wasn't any good, he'd play hell and say, I want my men to have better tea than this. You know, he was the hero of the, in those days, of the Middle East.
So, you in January, the battery, the unit moved back to the Suez Canal. What do you remember about that?
Well, everybody hated that, but I didn't. I enjoyed it. Because there again, they were spread out, little subsections all the way down the canal. You know, about every 500 or 600 yards, there was four men. And I had to keep making contact with them.
Now, was this as Donar or in your...
No, it was a Donar. I used to go to the posts every day. And I used to... There's some very steep banks on the Suez Canal. And I used to drive up the bank and then down the others, because the road ran on the other side of the bank. But I got quite good on this motorbike. I used to drive up the bank and along the top of it and down the other side of it to a post. And then I used to sort of go and have a natter with them. And then I'd go on to the next one and the next one and take any mail or... I seem to go an awful lot. I can't remember. I don't know whether I went every day. I can't remember, but I can't remember whether I used to visit all the posts every day or so many once a day.
And you were with 425 headquarters?
I was with 425, yeah. And I can't remember whether I went to the lot or just 425, because it was really everybody strung along. I used to go quite a long trip. Whether I visited everybody every day, I can't remember. But I know I quite enjoyed it. Every now and then I'd have a swim and I was out of the way. I thought it was quite a pleasant job. But I think it must be very boring for those chaps sitting there in that all day.
Then they moved from there into a camp, and this business of training for roads.
Yeah, you know, to go into roads, yeah. No, I'd not. And I've got a theory there that's when we lost a lot of our bad chaps. You know, I don't. It's just my theory, this. And
why was that? I mean, why?
It was pretty obvious that we were going on a very unpleasant job. There was, to start with, my job, which I was starting to learn to do, this OP. I was always hoping to be on this OP party, you see, with this thing. So I was sort of virtually going to be on it. But then we weren't going to take any Bren carriers with us. So I had to... The job of the Bren carrier was really to carry the radio, you see. The transmitter. So it was going to be my job to carry it. And they found a great... It was called a cook's bag. Great big square bag like that. And they found that this radio, this transmitter, would fit into this bag. And I'd got to carry it. And I've never been very fond of carrying weights for a long way. And I thought, well, I've landed myself a right job here. And they gave us some rope-soled shoes. So that's what gave us when we really found out what was going to happen. Because we were going to be landed, there was no real beaches or something. We were going to land on slippery, wet rocks. And that was the idea of these ropes. So this is, I don't know whether this is true, but that's what we were told. We had these rope sole shoes for something. And I thought to myself, well, I'm not all that good a swimmer. If I fall into the water... depth of water with all this on my back, I'm a goner, whether I've got rope sole shoes or not. And So I thought to myself, I've landed myself a right job here.
Did you realise that you were going to Rhodes, or was that...
No, but we knew it was an invasion and we were going to land on rocks and...
That was all you knew?
That's all.
The Rhodes business.
And we did some practising with into a landing craft. I never went on it, but...
Now, how did the bad chaps, as you...
Well, this is just my...
How did they get out of it?
They're supposed to say go sick and things like that. And then if you go sick and you get back to base depot after hospital, if they don't try hard to get back to the regiment, you get sent somewhere else, don't you? I mean, most South Knots as ours, when they got to the base depot, used to bend over backwards to get back. That's, again, just somebody might say who was there that, oh no, it didn't work like that at all, but I reckon it did. But we were beginning to lose all the bad ones, the rotten apples in the barrel then. The things we're getting now, that you could leave things lying about and they didn't get pinched and stolen. It's getting to be very, very different.
So things were improving in your...
French things, as far as I was concerned, it was... things were improving a lot.
Now, what's the next... you got a new Bren carrier, I think.
Then, what happened then was... All the other sort of regiments who weren't... Rommel had come into Africa, hadn't they? And there was a flap on and everybody was coming down and they were just going to send us up to Tobruk. We had to get ready very, very quickly. And I was given this practically brand new, well, it was seemed pretty new, although the one I left at Mirza Matruh wasn't too bad, Bren carrier. I was very pleased and I looked round and there was no tools in the toolbox and no pins. You see that each track link is joined together with a long pin about that long and you rivet it over. See? So if it breaks, you won't have to... There was a special tool for clamping them together, and putting the pin in again, you see. It would be a bit like going on a long journey without a spare tyre, you see. And... like a damn fall. I think I went and saw the Tiffy sergeant first and told him they hadn't got this sort of thing. Oh, he says, I think he said, well, you'll have to go without. It'll be all right, you know. We haven't got any. Well, I knew we were going a hell of a long way.
How did you know that?
I don't know. All the flap we were... I mean, we got to go a long way. Because, well, we thought the Germans were sort of Benghazi, somewhere like that, you see.
So what did you do?
So I thought, well, I can't go all that way without, it's like going a long journey. I mean, you wouldn't set off to Scotland without a spare wheel in you. But I wish I'd taken his advice and gone. Later on, I wished I had. But so I saw Peter Birkin. So I went and saw him. He was ever so busy and he was a bit impatient with me. I told him the position. Well, he says, you'll have to leave it behind. Then I wished I'd kept my mouth shut, you know. So, motorbike again. And off we set.
You did leave it behind?
We left it behind. And I was ever so, you know, I wish I'd kept my mouth shut. And I wish I'd taken the tip, you know. But I just wanted somebody with a bit of influence to get me these bits and pieces, you see. So we set off. We went to the pyramids, via the pyramids, and then I can remember ever so well that Mina House Hotel, we drove past that, and there was a lot of orange blossom. This is smell nice. I think someone will tell me that that time of the year there's no orange blossom, but I'm sure that's one of the things that stuck out in my mind, and seeing the pyramids and driving past Mina House. and off we went. And we took the desert road from Takaro, you know, toward towards Alex, isn't there? There's a desert road. You go across desert. And I remember we stopped for tea. Some of the cooks had mashed some tea, and we had a walkabout. And it was very, very cold. So what time of the year is it, and where the orange blossom comes in, I don't know. But it was, although it was hot in the daytime, it was very cold at night, because we poured petrol in a great big ring and set fire to it in the sand, you know, and we stood in the middle to keep warm. I can remember that. I'm sure that was then. And then we moved on, and we drove past Mirza Matru.
What sort of convoy discipline were you in? I mean...
Well, then, fairly, it was, you know, not taped together, but it was a long... And then, so I would have said it was beyond Mirza Matru, then one of these Benghazi handicaps had started. You know, everybody rushing down the other way, retreating. And we were allowed to keep to the road, and everybody else was driving along the desert, you know, six abreast. And...
Where were you on the motorbike?
I was sort of running up, driving up and down the convoy, you know. Sometimes we were held up and we'd start... I can't remember, but I remember driving up and down this convoy. I suppose if the convoy did 100 miles a day, I'd do 200 miles a day, you know, that sort of thing. Then all these chaps started rushing down, you know. Our morale was pretty high. We weren't very worried. But everybody reckoned we were going the wrong way. And we shouted back, it's not you that's going the wrong way, you know. That's all leg pulling. I don't think we thought it was all that serious. Well, nobody had told me it was serious. When we got to Saloon Pass, I think the top of the pass, there was a petrol dump. And everybody sort of got petrol and moved on. Oh, my motorbike had packed up then. Somewhere
before.
I don't know. I don't know whether I'd got tired or whether it had packed up or not. But I put it... I think I was doing all this driving up and down, and it was a bit pointless. It wasn't sort of... doing anything, because there was no... And the motorbike either packed up or I got tired, I don't know what. And I put it in the back of a three-tonner, which eventually the chap became my brother-in-law, a chap called Gordon Fleming. He was driving this three-tonner and he was all on his own. He was a bit fed up. So we put this in the back of the thing, about three or four of us lifted it in, and it was the petrol lorry. We had in those days, it was before the jerry can, we had these silver tin, very flimsy tin, four or five gallons they held, 4 gallon things. And that's how it was carried. It wasn't a tanker, you see. We carried these sort of 5 gallon square petrol tins. And when we got to Saloon Pass, it was empty, you see. Everybody filled up, and we had to stay behind and load it up, you see. So that put us right at the back, at the very, very back. And I didn't know I think maybe it was when we were filling up with petrol, and then after that everybody moved on. And I think they were told that things were, you know, things were getting a bit serious. And everybody had to drive close together. This is what I heard afterwards. I didn't know anything about this, and neither did Gordon. And everybody was retreating and going down, but we were given priority for getting petrol. We loaded this lorry up, and by the time... we'd got loaded up. I don't think we're in a terrific
hurry, really.